Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast. It's episode 99. I'm Mo, and I'm here with a very special guest today, a two-time Metal Hammer cover star, currently on one of four Metal Hammer covers available to collect right now. It's Mr. Winston McCall from Parkway Drive. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing very good.
Doing all right. I'm here in the mythical studio that you record this podcast.
Yeah.
No roadworks outside.
Today is the boardroom. Just killed the illusion. Yeah. got a bit of crackle on your mic there.
Can you hear it? Oh, got it. Yep. You're teaching me how to hold the
microphone.
That'll
do it. I know. Who do I think I am? Yeah. Fuck me. Obviously in town to talk about Viva the Underdogs, the huge new film from you guys that is actually out in cinemas for at least today, like right around the world. You can watch it in the UK on Wednesday as well. We'll get into all that in a bit. A couple of brief newsy bits to talk about as well. Ray Burton has passed away at the age of 94. Ray was, of course, the father of much-loved Metallica bassist Cliff Burton, who himself passed away in 1984 in a bus crash in Sweden. But despite losing Cliff, Ray always remained a much-loved member of the Metallica family, who would often be seen at their shows, hanging with members of the band right up until this year. He was a hugely popular guy, and you can read a really nice tribute to Ray over on Lars Ulrich's Instagram page now, so you should go over and check that out. And also, My Chemical Romance have just confirmed their much-rumoured UK tour. They're hitting up the MK Stadium on June 20th, which is the same stadium that Rammstein actually played over here. So,
damn.
Big deal that they're back.
Yeah.
Big deal indeed. But anyway, that's all for another time, I think.
Let's get into My Chem's for another time.
Yeah. Let's get into this film. So Viva the Underdogs, it's out in cinemas internationally today. That's Wednesday 22nd. You can use your Google machine to go and see which cinemas it's showing in the UK. This is actually the third film/documentary type thing that you've put out, right?
Yeah.
Test. Are we good? Test. Yeah, we're good.
Yeah.
Oh, these mics are giving me a heart attack today. Jesus Christ.
Technical difficulties. It's
no, we're
tense,
all good, I think.
It's
because, you know what? It's because I've just been watching this film.
Yeah.
About 2 hours ago, I was watching the bit where things go wrong and there are some technical mishaps and you're not sure if the show's going to go off. There's a lot of stuff about that kind of thing going on in there, isn't there? Like, it doesn't hold back on showing the things that can go wrong or nearly go wrong.
Really wrong. Yeah, it was... Well, that was a whole... It was really interesting because when we wanted to film it, we did want to show the fact that, like, yeah, shit happens. Like, it's not just... The thing that we feared was making another Happy Time Parkway movie, because the reality of what we do is not just, like, this... It's a high-stakes thing. Like, it's dangerous. There's a lot involved going on that can... Any one of these wheels can go... stop turning at any point in time. And if we screw it up, like, it's our health, our jobs, our lives, our livelihood, and the livelihood of our entire crew on the line. And it just happened to be the year where a hell of a lot of shit went wrong while we had a camera crew with us.
I was going to say, because, like, it kind of adds some probably unwanted, but it adds some kind of almost good narrative drama to the whole thing.
Yeah, it did.
It's like every show that you get a behind-the-scenes look at, there's, like, something going wrong, and it's all so on tenterhooks for a while.
It was so strange filming this, because for a long period of time we weren't quite sure what we were even filming, in the sense of we knew there was something interesting which we wanted to portray. But
I was going to ask you why now, because as I said, you've done a couple of these kind of things before. So what made you kind of think this is the time to do it again?
It was literally just like we just felt that the band was at a stage where the public perception of what we were doing and what we are was more aligned with older visual representations. Like, people go, oh yeah, what's the second documentary you guys put up? And we're like, yeah, the one that we put out 7 years ago. Shit's changed since then. So the idea of, like, basically bringing that up to date, because surely this would be kind of a shock to people that this is where that band has gone. And this is how things operate. But yeah, like, in terms of, like, the drama, it was when we started filming, we're like, we don't want to have to fake drama. Like, how are we going to, like, you got to have some kind of narrative for this. And it just happened to be like, the year where there was drama, and for all of the reasons you don't want any of these things to happen, it was also after they happened, we were like, well, at least we filmed it. Because, a lot of the times when we were filming things, the film crew was coming along with us because this was supposed to be a high point, not when your bloody headlining show gets shut down because a PA explodes, your things go wrong.
I mean, there's injuries. I think, is it Pi breaks his leg at
one point? Jesus. Like, that was
got food. No, not food poisoning, a virus, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Everyone had a virus, so there's a bit where people are literally puking into bins. And you're like,
as we're walking onto stage, it was definitely the whole ride of filming. We were just always shocked at the fact that Alan would, because we weren't filming all the time. Like, our film crew would rock up to certain shows, which were going to be seen as just, we're like, well, this is guaranteed to be, this is the biggest headlining show we've ever done in North America, and it's LA and in Hollywood, and it's sold out, and it's going to be sick. So they fly over and film it, and everything goes wrong. They rock up on their the tour where, like, we start off vomiting and everything. That was their first tour with us, and the two shows in, like, half the film crew is vomiting as well, and everything's like, can't figure it all out. And then they rock up on the festival tour, and they came specifically for like Resurrection Fest and Vakken and Resurrection Fest. Like, one of the shots you see of the Molotov not lighting and none of the pyro firing and everything, that was literally supposed to be this. He's like, I really want to get this photo, the shot of you and the crowd in the background, and we've been looking forward to that show for so long. Like, we're trying to get to Resurrection for literally 10 years to play that gig. And he came on stage for that bit, and bing, nothing works.
What's going through your mind while that's happening? Are you obviously you're kind of in the moment of the stage as well, but are you kind of thinking like, we're filming this and everything? Like,
at that point in time, like, that was the straw that broke the camel's back for me on that show.
You can kind of tell afterwards in the footage, because you're not a man whose shoulders sag very often, but there's a moment.
No, it's really like, interesting because I've had a lot of people who've watched that say, I can really tell, like, from your facial expression that it has gone wrong. And for me, I watch it and I can tell as well, but you never know if it's going to actually translate. So, it was. It's that moment for me was like, I knew I had my back to the crowd. And I was just like, yep, this as well. All right, cool. Like, I played the first four. Like, I literally, we walked on stage and the first, like, note of the intro track plays and my monitors literally exploded in my ears. So I had to rip out all of my monitors and play the first four songs with nothing in my ears. I was playing to the drums on stage and no monitors. And then on a big festival stage, like, it was me playing that da-da-da-da-da, with just reverberating around the stage to Gaz and not being able to hear guitars or anything. And I was just like, oh God, okay, this is how it's going to start. Like, this is how it's going to start after, like, we almost didn't get to play because everyone's getting struck by lightning. And I was like, all right, let's see how the rest of this show goes. And it kind of just, it was just the crowd was mental and the show was mental, but like behind the scenes, it was just constantly us just thin ice the whole time.
But apart from that, the film's a breeze. You should definitely all go watch it.
Yeah.
No, the thing is, like I said, all that stuff does actually add a real sense of, narrative.
Yeah.
Drama to it, but it also makes you have, I think, especially if you're not really familiar with what goes on behind the scenes of these huge shows and these kind of tours, it gives you a newfound level of respect, I think, for the band, because you can really see what it means to you guys and how much everyone puts into it. And how much is on the line, really, because you don't get many opportunities to take that step up and show everyone what you can do.
And that's what we wanted to put out there as well, was something that was representative of modern bands touring. Because, I'm sitting here right now opposite Motley Crue, the Dirt coffee mug, and like, but like, you look at the movies and the stuff that's been put out that's representative of just live music in general in a big way in terms of mainstream media or anything like that when it comes to film, and it is things like The Dirt and Bohemian Rhapsody and Rocket Man and stuff, and it's hugely popular, and it's showing an era which has been and gone, and people still see that as a representation of a touring musician. And it's not reality. Like, it's not, this isn't something where you go backstage to piles of drugs and money and whatever the hell you want and hop on your jet and fuck off and drive your sports car and all of this stuff. And you get off stage and you grind, like you work, you work, you work, you work. And yeah, we are a very large band and we still work our ass off. And we think it's, we just wanted people to see that, to actually understand that this is how the music industry works. And hopefully it does give people some insight. And if they get respect, like they take a sense of respect from it and understand that this isn't just us, this is how every other band operates in some way, shape or form. Yeah. And they have to, because that's how the, like, the money piles are gone. The comet's come and taken the dinosaurs out. That's the thing. Yeah. And we're the ones doing that in this day and age. So now you can see the real shit on the big screen. Yeah,
really can. There's a moment in there where, quite near the beginning, where there's a video of you back in the day, you're kind of saying, where do you want to be in?
Like, yeah.
I remember if it's five
next
or 10
years.
Next 5 years.
Yeah.
And you're kind of fresh faced and going, joking around about what you're going to do. What was it like watching that bit of footage back in the context of this film and what it represents for your career?
That's so weird, because it was, I didn't realize, I totally forgot that it was actually filmed, because that was one of the earlier concepts that we had for the whole movie. Was right. Remember that conversation we had in the band? And I kept bringing it up in interviews, and I think I did an interview with Ben. He was like, you know, I filmed that. I'm like, really? And then he went and found it, and we watched it back. I was like, yep. It doesn't surprise me. Like, it more hammers home the fact that this really has been unexpected. Like, unexpected in the sense of, like, every sense of it. I think the only people who saw this coming were the fans that keep dragging more of their friends to gigs next time we come to town, and kept pushing it bigger and bigger and bigger, because we've always been that band that people have been surprised at the level of success, because the music is way heavier than what they think we should be accessible to this amount of people coming, or we don't fit the mold for the look, or we don't fit the mold for the sound, or we're playing something that's going to, we're told, we'll have a shelf life or anything like that. When you look back and you think that even on year one, you thought you weren't going to last 5 years, and we're like on year 16 now, you're like, Jesus, all right, yeah, fair enough. Like, I can kind of see why this was a shock for so long.
Good lesson to fans as well. Young bands out there, film all your shit early on.
Yeah,
you never know when you're going to be able to use it and look back on it.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
What was the... you kind of talked about what the difficult stuff about making the documentary. Do you have a favourite moment in it? I'm presuming you've watched it all in its entirety now.
I've watched it a million times, man. The things that get me... to be honest, the final section after we'd finished playing Varken,
it feels like Varken was almost like, again, almost like narratively, like it was meant to happen. It's like the climax of the film,
100%.
Like all built towards that
fucking
massive show.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Ridiculous size.
And the thing with it was when it was when we were having the concept of, all right, it's all heading towards here. This is going to be the climax for it. Can you imagine the stress of realizing that if that show doesn't go well, then the whole project is screwed? But being able to watch that back and have that documented in such an awesome way, being able to see us on stage at the end there and have that visual reminder of that moment happened, and I just get to see our faces and the faces of friends who were genuinely happy at that point in time, because I guess there's plenty of other times in the movie where you do get to see the stress and stuff, and it's nice to know that those moments can really come true, because that's a pretty big, like, I can remember being told, oh, you're back, and they've said, here's the offer, you're headlining, and just going, holy shit, and feeling awesome, but also just going, that's a hell of a responsibility.
Europe's most metal festival as well.
That's
the real shit.
The real shit. Yeah, that's it. And it's if you're ever gonna like have a bit of doubt about yourself, like it's a situation like that where you really have to like step your game up and be sure of yourself. And even then, like it took us getting to stage to walk on before we realized, holy shit, people didn't leave. Everyone is here to watch, and looking at the sky and going, there's no rain clouds. This is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And even then, it took me 4 songs before it sunk in of like, this is going well.
Yeah.
Like,
we're doing it.
Not only is it going well, it's getting better. Like, this is not going to screw up. Like, we got this. And just being able to know that happens. Like, it can happen, and something doesn't have to go wrong at the last second.
Yeah, it's a brilliant moment. I mean, I say moment, it's a lot of the gigs.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's kind of like we come with you on this journey, and then you almost get to like feel the release with you, and then just get to sit back and watch a big ass rock show.
Yeah, yeah. Cheers, man. I'm stoked it translates.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's funny how these things work out. As you say, I'm sure it was so stressful at the time, but it's ended up being a very compelling motion picture.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Now, we almost broke the internet with the amount of questions people sent in for you when we said we were going to have you on the podcast.
Cheers.
People asking all sorts of stuff. Don't forget, if you do want to get involved with the podcast in general or future guests or anything else, it's facebook.com/Melthammer Readers. We're also on Twitter as well and all that business. Where should we start? Troy Trevathan asks, will Parkway ever do a gig
in Geelong?
In Geelong.
We've done a bunch of gigs in Geelong.
I was going to look this up where it was and then I forgot. Is this in Australia?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it might be.
It's Melbourne.
Oh, right.
Yeah, we haven't done one there in a few years, but yes, we will. And I can't, like, does this mean you've never been to a Geelong gig? Like, you're not showing too much cred there, Troy.
Sorry, Troy, you've just been showing up, mate. Chris Haylock says, seeing you guys in April at Wembley, that, of course, ridiculously huge show coming up. Mm. What's your favourite breakdown to play live?
Ooh. That's a good one. It's kind of hard to like go past the bottom feeder breakdown, to be honest, just because that moment is A, I like the actual piece of musical breakdown-ness, and I also enjoy the fact that people completely lose their shit the most to that part. So
I mean, you set up with the call out, like,
yeah, I know, that's it. And I also enjoy when like we write something and in our heads, whenever we're writing something, it's like, how is this going to work live? And when we're writing that, I was like, this song, that part of the song has to make people completely lose their shit. Because when we're writing, I was like, this makes me lose my shit.
I mean, I remember when we had you at the Melthammer Golden God Awards a couple of years back.
Yeah, I jumped in the crowd on that part,
like,
didn't
jumped
I?
Into the crowd. That's and right, it was just fucking hell, I've done a lot of these and I've never seen anyone do that before. Like, it just brings something out of people.
Yeah, it does that. It does it for me on stage. Like, and that's the part when whatever pyro we have left, our dudes is just like, hit everything.
Yeah, and smash
and I'm just
buttons.
Like running around in the middle of just going, woo. So, yeah.
Excellent. Fully backed. Jack S. Nabel Jr. That's a cool name. Asks, when on tour in the States, are there places you always enjoy stopping when you have an off day or before a show?
Ooh.
I don't know if that's like little places or cities or can I ask that how you want
it? So the States is really, really nice for off days. It's a beautiful country to travel around. The best one that we've found thus far was actually on the last tour, Waco, Texas. Now have a wave pool. So we played Dallas and then the next day we literally hired a car and drove to Waco to this wave pool, which is literally like there's like not even a sign. You pull off a dirt road on the freeway and drive a couple of miles into this field and all of a sudden there's this old cable ski park that has this incredible man-made wave, which was bizarre. Like, it's the most bizarre thing in like Waco, Texas.
Never let it be so dramatic, like, break character.
So yeah, that's that. Waco, Texas takes the cake for that one for me. Inland surfing.
Finnmeister 101 on Twitter asks, how do you feel about the latest Star Wars film? He says he knows you weren't a particularly big fan of The Last Jedi.
Oh, you know, how long do you have for me to rant?
You could probably do a minute or so on Star Wars.
All right, listen.
Last Jedi was divisive, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Like, I'm a Star Wars fanatic. My opinion is why did they need to make those three last films? And I'll
writing them all off.
Yeah, that's just, but like, if the best thing you can come up with with the finale is literally, oh, you know that guy that was dead? He wasn't actually dead, and now he's back. We're going to kill him again. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, he was a great character back then, and now, like, you're giving me nothing here.
Definitely felt like a lot of fan service, and because there was a negative reaction to the last one, and it kind of
that's
felt like
way
Disney
too
went,
much
well,
for
we
me.
We need to make everyone happy again.
It was way, and it went overboard. Like, I don't need to see 1,000 Star Destroyers all killing planets, and a zombie Palpatine, and all the Jedi and all the Sith. Like, whatever. The Mandalorian's doing it better, and it's a TV show. So, yeah,
there you go. Slammed.
Yeah.
Matt Heeks asks, what things do you miss from earlier album cycles or tours that you wish you could still do or do again?
Not much, to be honest. Like, not much, only because we've been around for so long that the progress of this band was not like you're doing this one thing and all of a sudden it you're doing something completely different and you'll never, like, you get to play 100 small gigs and now it's just big gigs, or you're all of a sudden in a tour bus. Like, the amount of time that we have played every type of venue from 50 people to whatever we're doing now has been all reasonably equal. So there's no point where I'm like, I didn't get enough time playing to 50 people. I didn't get enough time yeah. sleeping on a sidewalk or in hotel rooms sharing a bed or in our own bus or... like what we're doing now in buses ourselves and having.
I think there's actually an anecdote you say in the film to Jose Mangan about the smallest gig you've ever played or something. Yeah. You talk about like you've definitely put in the hours in that kind.
Yeah,
of...
Yeah, that's it. And it's not the thing. The thing is, like, it's not that I don't ever want to do it again. It's more the fact that it's so familiar to me that there's no void there that needs to be filled with more experience in that regard. Like, it's been a really fun process. Continually growing as a band because we're constantly given a new place to experience and to grow into, and I enjoy growing. I enjoy something new and being able to go, whoa, the stage is a bit bigger, or there's more people here, or you get to write another record and now you have more skills or you have more time to work on it. So being more restrained is kind of something that I don't necessarily desire.
Do you think that having been through that experience and putting in those miles and you know, playing the toilet venues and everything that can and does go wrong with that is important for bands? Because
Hell
by
yeah.
the time you get to the level you're at now, it means more shit will go wrong and maybe yeah. on a bigger scale than you've ever seen before.
Hell but yeah.
you're used to having to think on the fly and
oh,
deal 100%. With
weird situations. It's character building. That's the thing. Like, it 100% is character building. And unless you have... that experience, like there's going to be something that goes wrong at some point in time. And at the end of the day, it helps you, like, it just helps you grow not only as a person, but as helps you define your craft and teaches you how you want to be as a performer in a much better way, because you get to figure out what not to do and what to do. And like, it's literally just hours spent within the craft, and that's the thing. Like, there's no substitute for experience, no matter what. Even if you put out like the greatest album ever, and that's your first thing that you ever create, you're guaranteed to build on that. If that's your starting point, then you're going to create something absolutely mental down the line. That's the thing. So, yeah, every band should grind. Every band should grind. That's it. I'm skeptical of the bands that don't.
Yeah, yeah. I see a band that goes from something to from nothing to something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Time, yeah. That's it. Yeah, yeah. No substitute for experience.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an interesting one from Ben Wilmot, and obviously something a lot of people are talking about at the moment in general. He says, with the sheer hell of all the forest fires in Australia and the increased focus around climate change, is there anything bands can do to reduce their carbon footprint? And then he says, rock tours are essentially jetting around the world and burning a lot of stuff on stage each night for nothing other than sheer pleasure.
Yeah, yeah, it's a really interesting one, that. It's, to be honest, I think it's this scratches the surface of a lot of things. Like, it's a pretty big discussion to get into in terms of time spent, but I think what we're hitting now is basically the point where a technological revolution needs to take place, because as much as like being in a band and jetting around the world and all of those things impact the carbon footprint at the end of the day, that pales in comparison to the sheer fact that the carbonization of what our entire civilizations are built upon hasn't evolved since the Industrial Revolution. Our technology from the ground up, everything that we do to produce power, rather than these small chains we have at the moment, is built on outdated technology, which is causing these issues. And I'm sure every band on the planet, if you gave them a solar-powered plane, a solar-powered bus or something that isn't going to do that and gave them access to it, they'd take it in a second. But at the moment, that's not accessible for people, and it seems like as much as you can make a change, it's going to, like, what is happening within the world is coming down to much larger sources of emissions. So you have to really go all the way back to that root of where the technology begins, like right at the source of all of the manufacturing, and work backwards from there rather than like start picking away at, like, it's almost putting, like, trying to put band-aids on top of an infection that spread much, much, much further than that. And it's a shitty thing to say in terms of shirking responsibility, because I do think everyone's responsible for everything. But at the same point in time, I do think there's potential to address the problem in a far more extensive manner. Yeah. And that lies in the hands of people that have lots of money and lots of power.
I was going to say, it, like you said, and it's very true, everyone has a role to play, but I think there's a lot of big business influenced powers that have very cleverly kind of spun the argument, so people are going, well, why, you're not taking your recycling out, and you're in a band, you're doing this, and when actually, like you said, there's probably other more nefarious things that could be sorted out.
That's the thing, and we all do whatever we can with it, and it's very hard not to feel like I want to feel responsibility, and I want to feel the least amount of guilt around what we do and all of those things. And I know people want to change, but at the end of the day as well, like, you have to be willing to see the big picture of where responsibility will genuinely lie. Like at the moment, in Australia, we have the opportunity to have a revolution in terms of the way power is actually generated on a large scale for our entire country, and we currently have a government who, against the private sector and against their own research, still are saying we want more coal-fired power plants in the country, and no one in the country is saying yes please. Everyone is saying we don't want that, but they're still pushing ahead with it, and that's when you start saying, why are these people doing that? So
Jorav Tripsis on Twitter says, Winston has said before that he remembers the first time they played a gig in Wollongong.
Wollongong. You're loving these names, aren't you?
I know.
Geelong, Wollongong.
I saw them and I just thought, Winston will know that.
Yeah.
Because it was the first time they were given a platter of sandwiches backstage. So, what's your favourite sandwich, Billy?
What's my favourite sandwich, Phil?
We're covering all the bases today.
This is great. We're going super deep on this one. What's the carbon emissions of your sandwich filling? I'm partial to a good salad sandwich, to be honest.
Like, salad sandwich?
Salad sandwich.
Come on.
What? I'm vegetarian, so it's not like some roast beef with weird chutney or something. Yeah, what do you got
in
here?
A bit of cheese in there or something.
There's a bit of cheese in there. Love a bit of cheese and salad sambo. All right, that's pretty good. I like a grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah, it can't be a grilled cheese.
Since you start grilling the cheese, then you're in flavour town.
Have you ever had a Plowman's?
Yeah, love a Plowman's. Bit of Branston pickle on there.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Now we're talking.
Ooh.
Now we're talking.
Suit you, sir.
Jack Hawkins asks, the Bloodstock 2019 headline set was killer, but it was touch and go with the wind being as bad as it was. Yes, it was. For those who aren't maybe based in England and don't know, Bloodstock
played in a hurricane?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Bloodstock main stage kind of got postponed for like half a day because there were these crazy fucking weather conditions going on. Jack asks, can you tell us what it was like behind the scenes before you came on stage that day?
Oh, hell yeah. I'll take you back to when we arrived the night before, and within 2 minutes of our bus pulling up, we got bogged because the mud was so deep. Within five minutes, we had to get the
bus.
Welcome to England. Your bus is getting pulled out by a tractor. But the winds the entire day, we were having constant updates on. When the winds finally peaked, I don't know if people were aware of this, but they were so strong that the screens got pulled down and the back got torn off the stage, taken down because it was literally lifting the stage off the ground, which is mental when you're considering how much wind force that takes. It wasn't until about 10 minutes before we went on where we were like, okay, we're just running the show. We're full pyro, everything, we're going for it. We'll deal with it as it goes. And we'll just hope that like there's not a gust of wind. Yeah. But if you watch the footage back, you can see when the gusts hit, when certain pyro bursts are going off and the flames go up and then sideways. And like when that happens, it's terrifying on stage because the pyro fuel blast radius just expands and it turns like a barbecue on stage. So yeah, for us it was an interesting set. It was a really interesting set in that regard. And you just, it's one of those things where we're like, well, fuck you, wind, we're playing anyway.
Yeah. And as Jack said, it was obviously received very well.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Marco LG says, your performance, we talked about it earlier, at the Golden Gods in London a couple of years back made me into a fan. What are your memories of that night and of that dive into the crowd?
I definitely remember the dive and moshing in the pit, and that was one of the best ones. I remember it was a trip out seeing Ozzy walk past as well, and Maynard. Yeah.
The world's shortest speech ever that Ozzy gave.
it was great because he was side stage, and anytime someone mentioned him, who introduced him? I can't remember who
Zach
introduced
Wilde
him.
Zach Wilde introduced him,
and it was like Zach almost introduced him a bunch of times, and every time Ozzy would like go to walk out and shout and go, no, not now, I'm pulling back. Good on
it
him.
It was wild backstage that day. Like, we had the whole Osborne clan.
It was
oh my God, I'm on MTV in 2002.
Yeah, it was a trip out. Like, for us walking around, we're just like, oh, don't walk out there. Don't walk out here, okay? Yeah, Jesus Christ, just keep your head down. You can do a gig in a second.
Steve Briscoe has a question about Wembley. He says, how involved was Winston in sorting the Wembley bill, also featuring Hatebreed, Stick to Your Guns, and Venom Prison? Straight from the Path, isn't it?
No, Stick to Your Guns.
No, it is Stick to Your Guns.
Yeah, it is.
No, I thought so.
Yeah.
And Venom Prison, which will be ridiculous. And he says,
Will Venom Prison smash it?
Yeah.
Yes, they will.
Do you know that Venom Prison will smash it?
Of course. Yeah. We're involved in every bill that gets put together, like literally every bill. We involved in everything that we do. Nothing happens with Parkway that is out of our control.
Well, a lot of people don't probably know how that dynamic works. And I do imagine with a lot of bands that come to Wembley, they probably don't have as much. How do you put a bill together for filling Wembley? Because obviously it's got to be metal. It's got to be something that you think.
It depends on what
stage
you're going for. So for this tour, we wanted like Hatebreed to start with. Touring with Hatebreed for us is a massive, massive deal. Like, the first band that Parkway ever covered was Hatebreed. The first song that I ever sung was with Luke's old band covering a Hatebreed song. Like, Satisfaction is the Death of Desire was the reason that I got into like screaming in the first place. They have a massive, massive impact on this band. So after that, like, it was get friends who we really want to push and we really want to expose who are really good, which was Stick to Your Guns, and get someone who is newer, who hasn't had the chance to play in front of as many people as we're going to have on these shows, who we think should be in front of these people, because the people that come to Parkway gigs are fucking awesome and they have open minds. We see how they react to every band generally on the bill. People will have a positive reaction to, and Venom Prison are fucking rad. So
yeah, I mean, it's an amazing thing to see a British death metal band, mm-hmm. like not even a slightly death metal band, like a fucking death metal band on stage at Wembley.
At Wembley,
when
we're putting it together, I was just like, oh, this is so sick to see this, to see that line up, and then like at Wembley, I'm just like, yeah, great. This is like, because this is how progress is made as well. When it comes to helping build bands, it's not we're very aware that this is a community. It doesn't grow with just one band being popular.
Absolutely. Like, well, I remember when, because you guys supported Bring Me over here,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah.
And that was kind of when Bring
that
Me
was on
really
This Is a Hell.
On, yeah. the, on well, the, you know, yeah. just about to break into yeah. the crazy level of
that was it,
on
yeah.
now. You guys came over. I think yeah. Architects came over with them as well on that.
Yeah, it was us, Architects. Oh, God, who else was on that one? Us, Architects. While She Sleeps? No, it wasn't While She Sleeps. No, it wasn't. Can't remember who opened that one. Yes. Yep. It was Devil Wears Prada.
Devil Wears Prada. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, that felt at the time like this was, you know, all bands that could be going on and doing big things, and lo and behold, Architects and yourselves now have since gone on to headline Wembley Arena.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And it, like it takes bands exposing younger bands to their audience to do that, and that's how things grow. It's always been the way. Mm-hmm. So we always do it with every single tour. Like there's always. We do our best to try and get a newer band on a slot which will expose them to a newer audience, an audience that isn't theirs.
Yeah. And also getting to share the road with like bands I know that have inspired you guys, yeah. like Hatebreed. You yeah. toured with Killswitch last year.
Yeah.
Like that must feel yeah. crazy,
dude. It's wild. It's really really wild. Like it's very. We're in that really strange position where when it comes to putting together a set list. And we start like writing down like the bands that you want to tour with, and then bands submit if they're available to do a tour or something, and you start going through them. And it's really odd for us, like kid in a candy store situation of like, here are the bands that you can play with for the next like couple of months. And just like looking at names like Killswitch and Hatebreed, you just like, you giggle. It's a real like, what the hell moment. Like Luke and I are the ones that mainly work on the lineups with our booking agent, and doing these, especially doing Hatebreed, I was like, you realize how strange this is? And he was like, yeah, it kind of hit me the other day. Like I was on the phone to Jamie Jaster like at 3 a.m. about Hatebreed getting on the gig to play in arenas in Europe, and I just kind of twigged how odd this was, because I can remember when we used to cover their songs, and it's a very like those are the kind of moments that are very 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 surreal.
It's gonna be a hell of a show.
It's gonna be a banger, buddy.
Am I right in thinking that that's the last date on that particular run?
I think so.
Yeah. So I mean, it's an interesting year for you guys, because it's like a year of celebration and reflection in a way, because you've got
yeah,
a film 100%. Coming out, and you've got this big run that's kind of, I don't know if the end of the Reverend cycle, but certainly yeah. kind of putting some kind of full stop on it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
is it kind of drawing a line under this chapter of your career for now, do you think?
I'm not sure. I don't know if we've discussed it in that manner yet, but it kind of is. Especially now that you pointed out with the movie and stuff, I never even looked at it in that perspective, but to a degree it kind of is. I know that this is the last, like we're doing it. This will be the only UK show we play this year. Mm-hmm. And the only Europe show we play this, only Europe tour we do this year. We got one tour in every major market, and then we are working on writing music. So I guess when you start writing new music, you kind of are ending a cycle, aren't you?
Yeah, your head's in a slightly different space.
It definitely is. Yeah, it's the first time that we will be able to disengage from what's going on at this point in time, which has just been non-stop since like before Aya came out. We just haven't had a break because it's been. Everything's exploding. This is mental.
Literally, in some cases.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I can't wait. It's going to be an amazing show. It is April 18th at Wembley Arena with Hatebreed, Stick to Your Guns, and Venom Prison. A ridiculous bill. Don't be stupid. Just make sure you see it. And the film, as I said, is out right now. If you happen to be listening to this on Wednesday, January 22nd, Viva the Underdogs. It's an amazingly compelling watch. I presume there'll be some kind of DVD release following it.
There's going to be something. I'm not sure.
Or Blu-rays sure or whatever.
I'm not sure how you release it, but yeah, grab it, go and watch it in the cinema, because it's been mixed for the cinema as well, which is a rare thing with heavy music. Yeah, you really want to get your head blown off.
You do as well. Yeah. You do. Yeah, make sure you go and check out when you can watch it in the UK right now. Well, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with podcast 100. We'll have some special
happy
things
birthday. Happening
there. Thanks very much. Winston, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure as always, and we'll see you in April.
Cheers, mate.
Nice one.